Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome along to Writer's Routine. This week, we're having a look inside the day of Sophia Money Coutts. Her brand new book is The Wishlist. It's out on the 6th of August. It's a rom-com all about Florence. Florence, who writes down her perfect man in a little note to herself. And then soon after, she is aghast when he wanders into her bookshop one day. We talk about the different types of person that you can be to get you working every day, a morning or an afternoon person, and whether that definition is actually useful at all. You can also hear about the narrative voice and how Sophia decided which one Florence would have. And also, she started off as a journalist, Sophia, so you can hear how that has affected her novels.
I started out my writing life as a journalist, and therefore I'm more used to writing short pieces, you know, 500-word pieces or 1,200-word pieces. You really finesse and you really have to think about every single sentence. Whereas with a book, if you're trying to get to 90,000 words or 100,000 words, if you leave years and years, then of course you've got the time to go over every sentence. But I am trying to get better at just getting the words out at the moment and then going back potentially at the end of the day and fiddling around. It's not that successful. I find it very hard to move on for a sentence if I'm not that happy with the previous sentence. But I think for fiction, the flow is better if you can somehow keep going.
Loads more on the way with Sophia Money Coutts. Fantastic name, brilliant book, amazing chat. Stay there. It's this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, welcome along. My name's Dan, thank you so much for finding us. This is Writer's Routine, the show that takes a sneak peek inside the working day of some of the most successful authors around. Now this week, we've got a writer of all sorts. Sophia Money Coutts, she is a journalist, an author. She writes for the Sunday Telegraph, the Evening Standard 2. She's written for Tatler, for the Mail, for the National. And this is her third novel, it's called The Wishlist. Now she had the idea for it at a very adult party. In fact, before we go on, I'm going to warn you, quite a lot of adult chat in this. You can have fun with that. It's on the way. Now, Sophia and I are both morning people. And I've actually found, doing over 100 episodes of this show, that writers are one or the other. They maybe, because the reason they don't work a 9-to-5 is because they like can't really do that. That's not how their flow works. I'm getting very zen, but that's not how their energy stream kind of goes through the day. My word, what words am I using? But most writers are either getting it done early or they're hanging in there and getting it done late. We talk about why that is and if it's self-fulfilling and how useful those definitions actually are. We also talk about naming, and you can hear my theories of how people fit into their name. I mean, I tell pretty much anyone that will listen that naming theory. And I can't believe we've done the show for so long and you've not heard it yet. So stick around for that. And there's loads about the book, don't worry, and actual writing. That's the reason we're here. It's a proper lovely, proper rom-commy chat. And it starts, as always, with what Sophia sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
Currently, the place where I sit down to write is actually on my bed because I've been in lockdown in my sister's house, and there's no spare desk space. So I sit on my bed most days, looking at the blinds in front of me and trying to sort of shut out the noise of my 7 and 9-year-old nieces downstairs doing their homeschooling. So that is currently where I'm writing from. It's very bad for my back, I think.
Doing it in the bed, I think that would lead me to live perhaps quite too much of a luxurious, louche lifestyle if I was doing that. How are you making sure you are switched on and you're being professional? Are you still in your pyjamas? What's going on?
I hate to say it. Today, actually, has been one of those days where I've been in my pyjamas up until just speaking to you, Dan. I've had a shower and got changed, especially for you.
Right, okay. I mean, it's half two, just to let daylight in upon magic. It's half past two. So, you know, you're making strides, Sophia. You're getting there.
Yeah. I think with writing, you've got to be comfortable, though, right? So if I'm comfortable in my t-shirts and, you know, pyjama bottoms, then that's all right with me. As long as I have a shower or bath at some point during the day, which I always do, then I think that's all right. No?
What works for you, do you, I think is the phrase
exactly.
That people are saying now.
As long as the words get out.
How are you managing to... What have you got that's creative around you? I speak to some authors who surround themselves with trinkets, with art on the walls, with plot points. If you're just in a room, in your bed, in your sister's house, what have you got there that brings you to the creative space that perhaps you have at home?
I don't have anything very visual. I have to hide my phone because I have to literally tuck my phone behind my laptop screen so that it's not in direct eyesight and I'm not tempted to pick it up and go on Twitter every 3 seconds. Sometimes I turn it off because that's just underlines the point. I'm a real fidgeter with my phone. Towards the later stage of writing, I have a massive pin board that I plot a bit like Carrie in Homeland did. If anyone ever watched Homeland, she had that very multicoloured sort of mad board about the plot that she was trying to uncover. And I have lots of little sticky notes sort of depicting, you know, different plot points and different chapters and characters that I need to work on. But that doesn't tend to happen towards the beginning of my books. I have to save that for the end when I'm sort of tying up loose ends.
Why do you not do that from right at the start then? Why are you leaving it till when you're tying up loose ends rather than trying to tie them up early on? What's happening there?
The way I write, it seems to unfold in my head at the beginning. And I have this sort of vision of normally the main two characters come first and I write loosely around them and their characters and their likes and dislikes and try and get to know them properly. And I write notes on my laptop. So I've got sort of character files for each one. But it's not until I've got, say, around, you know, 90 to 100,000 words of the whole book there that I then sit down and for some reason need a visual pin board from start to finish. And it's a bit like a jigsaw then. Once I've got the pieces sort of loosely in place, I can shuffle them around a bit. But at the beginning, no, for some reason, I just sort of write from my head.
You mentioned character notes and folders and files for them. What form is your planning and plotting taken on the computer? If I were to kind of walk in and have a root around in your laptop, how much could I find out about the story that you're telling?
I'd love to say that it's very, very organized and efficient, but it's a bit like my email inbox, which actually I can see here. Currently, my email inbox has 16,151 unread emails in it. So my files for each book tend to go things like book four heroine notes, book four heroine new notes, book four heroine definitive final notes, and then so on for the, you know, for the hero. And I'll do that for various different characters. I'll have chapter outline book four, final chapter outline book four, final. In fact, I think it was Beth O'Leary and another author on Instagram recently who said the same. It's a sort of chaotic filing system on there, but again, if it works and it gets the words out, I know at least that it's all written down somewhere. Therefore, I'd much rather have it on my laptop than in notebooks I could quite easily lose. So it is at least down somewhere.
You mentioned heroin, stuff about the heroine. Now, before we really do jump into the book, which we'll do in a little bit, makes me think about names. At what point do you name your character? If you're referring to them as her as heroine... it's heroine for quite a long time. When do you settle upon Florence and Gwendolyn?
Gwendolyn, love Gwendolyn. No, actually, to be fair, that is normally one of the very first things I do, and I love it. That's the best bit. So I'm currently working on book four, and I have I've got a name for my heroine. I don't want to reveal it yet because I think it's very hard to start writing your main characters if you don't have a name for them. You need to get to know them like you get to know your mates, right? So I try and come up with, at least for my hero and my heroine, their names very, very early so I can get to know them. And I've been, with book four, I've been really faffing about with my hero's name and it hasn't been right for ages. And I think, actually courtesy of my brother, he's helped me come up with a name that just suddenly you think of something and you go, aha, that's right, he is so-and-so. So that is how I've done it, mostly with, actually with the plus one, my first book, Polly and Jasper came pretty easily. With my second one, yeah, Lil and Max did as well. And then, yes, in the wish list, which I've got coming out, yeah, Zach and Florence, I think. Yeah, they all just seem to fit. And once I'd got those names, then I could more easily write around them and work out who they were.
What do you mean you had names and they weren't working? Surely the only person that they're working for is you. You can call your own character whatever you want them to be. Why is it not working?
Because I normally have a sense of who I want that person to be, I suppose, very, very vaguely, before I start plotting. And I just, if it's a, you know, if I was calling a character, you know, Polly, she was so a Polly, she couldn't have been a Sally, or a, she couldn't have been Lil. Lil was a very different character to Polly in my head, and hopefully in the reader's heads as well. And I just need to, I need to pin that down, and her name in my head needs to reflect her character before I can get to grips with the story, if that makes sense.
It builds on a great theory that I have, which I will tell anybody, which I think nominative determinism kind of works the other way. So I think all, like, for instance, my name is Dan. All Dans are exactly the same. Like, I've never not known a Dan to be exactly how I am. So, you know, a bit loud, a bit brash, a bit cocky, but, you know, kind of sweet and lovable. It's the same with you're a Sophia.
Yeah, we like Dan.
You're a Sophia. Like, if I may, you sound like a Sophia. I can pick a Colin out of a lineup. You know what I mean? So...
Well, oh yeah, I'm very conscious of my sort of honking voice. Yeah, I know what you mean. But then I hope that my, I don't know, I mean, I suppose Polly, in a way, she was a bit sort of clumsy and a bit hopeless, lovable. That was what I wanted to get across with her. Florence, my heroine in the wish list, I wanted her to be slightly old-fashioned, I suppose, so that seemed to fit with her. Yeah, no, you could be right, but it's just the process I spend. Yeah, I spend the first few weeks when I'm beginning to sort of pull the strings together of a new book in my head together, I spend the first few weeks really trying to think hard about the two main names, because then it all falls from there for me, really. Well, I, because my writing life is slightly split in two, I'm sort of part journalist, part book writer. It sort of depends, but in terms of books, what I tend to do is I will start thinking about a book and I will go for very long walks. Well, okay, the day itself, I will quite often get up and immediately go for a brisk sort of hour-long walk while I mull over what scene I might be writing that day and what I want to cover, dialogue potentially in my head between the characters. And then I'll get back, have an extremely strong coffee and write like mad until about lunchtime. I'll probably have another coffee break at some point in between, but I know that I have a finite number of hours, morning hours, when my brain works and I can get out, you know, between 1,000 and 1,500 words in that time span. Whereas in the afternoon, if I tried to write 1,000 words, you know, it would take me until midnight. My brain just sort of seems to stop at about lunchtime. So normally I stop then, down tools, go for another walk quite often with my... all my books, actually. I've escaped for a bit to the country, to Yorkshire and to Norfolk, to escape from the city and to be very isolated and to be able to go and walk and mull over what I've just written or what I'm about to write. And then I'll come back after a long walk in the afternoon, have inevitably about 10 pieces of toast or a piece of cake and a cup of tea. And then I might get one more hour out between sort of 5 and 6, or a couple of hours if it's a good day between 5 and 7. And then I'll stop for the day and watch some telly and have a glass of wine, probably.
How good are you at switching off when you're having your glass of wine, when you're watching your telly? How good are you at closing your day's work off and not thinking about the story until tomorrow?
I'm pretty good, I think, at switching off. Although I like to think that subconsciously, when I'm away, and I, you know, last year I went to Norfolk to write the wish list. Say I'm away and I've I properly shut myself off from everyone. Even when I'm, you know, sitting on the sofa with my wine watching Succession, it was actually when I was in Norfolk. I like to think that underneath, because I've spent all day with the characters, there are things that could be working themselves out. And I have a sort of fanciful idea that maybe even when I'm asleep at night, you know, things are sort of unraveling or plots are developing. And then I wake up and I think, aha, I know what I need to do with that bit or that chapter.
If you're writing while you're also doing other bits of work at the same time, how prepared do you have to be on what you are writing on the day when you are sat down to tell your story?
Do you mean with regards to books or and juggling it with journalism?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. So how good are you at, I guess, when you're compartmentalizing stuff like that, when you are writing journalism, when you're doing that kind of thing, and if you've not got the most amount of time that you'd like to sit there and leisurely work on your story, how prepared do you have to be to sit there and get going?
Yeah, it's I would say I'm probably still working this one out. I think balancing book writing with journalism, I do a couple of columns a week, it's still a work in progress, I would say. I'm normally, if I get up very early, and if I've got a column to write, I'll write the column and then I will try and do some book writing after that. But I feel like, I don't know if other writers feel like this, I reckon I have about 1,000 to 1,500 words, as I said, in me and on a good day. And if I've already used up, say, 1,000 of those words for a column, I will only get 500 words of the book done. And I think that's just how it works. I don't think I can squeeze many more words out of me really in a day. Actually, today is a case in point. I had to do a column this morning and then I had to finish a piece of journalism after that, and I've done 2,000 words, and I'm not sure that the last 500 words were very good. So I'm waiting for an email from my editor going, did you really want to send this in? So yes, it's a bit of a struggle, but I'm working on balancing it all.
How okay, I mean, if you're working at it, maybe you are trying to change things, but how okay are you with that?
With the juggling?
Yeah, well, knowing that you might only get 500 words of a story.
Oh, yeah, there are days when if I'm really trying to, you know, work hard on a book, it frustrates me. But I've sort of made my peace with it. I know now, more so with, as I'm working on my fourth book, more than I did with my first book, that is literally just how my brain works. And there might be days when it's frustrating, but there's no point in getting cross because I can't really do anything about it. And I'm much better now at thinking, okay, fine. Down tools for the day, you know, take the afternoon off, and then tomorrow will be better, hopefully. And it normally is. I normally wake up and think, okay, let's go, and it's fine again.
The 1,500 words that you'd ideally get done, how perfect are they? Or are you prepared to massively overwrite so you can just pick it apart in the editing?
I tend to edit a bit as I go along. I'm actually trying to change that. I've been experimenting with my fourth book, not very successfully, with literally just trying to keep going. Just get the sentences out, go, instead of writing a sentence, picking it apart, fiddling around with it, moving words around. I suppose because I started out my writing life as a journalist, and therefore I'm more used to writing short pieces, you know, 500 word pieces or 1200 word pieces. You really finesse and you really have to think about every single sentence. Whereas with a book, if you're trying to get to 90,000 words or 100,000 words, you know, if you leave years and years, then of course you've got the time to go over every sentence. But I am trying to get better at just getting the words out at the moment and then going back potentially at the end of the day and fiddling around. It's not that successful. I find it very hard to move on for a sentence if I'm not that happy with the previous sentence. But I think for fiction, the flow is better if you can somehow keep going. So that's an experiment.
To talking about being a journalist, what else, apart from that, which may be for you a bad habit as you're trying to change it, but what else did as writing journalism, what else has that, I guess, taught you about novel writing?
Well, I think the main one is deadlines, I have to say. I remember one of my editors at HQ, HarperCollins, saying she loved journalists who wrote books because generally we hit our deadlines because we've been trained to do that, right? You know, I used to work on newspapers, and if you didn't miss your deadline, I mean, if you didn't hit your deadline, you'd be in big trouble. So I have a sort of instilled fear of missing a deadline in me. And I think that is very helpful when it comes to books. I think a lot of people tend to push book deadlines back, and actually I did have to at one point, I think it was with What Happens Now, my second book. I'd had a sort of hideous breakup and had to have an operation, and I had to push my deadline back. It was only by about 5 or 6 days, but it still made me feel quite sort of ill with worry that I dared to ask if I could move my deadline back. And of course, my editor was totally cool with it, but I felt like I was letting the side down by doing that. So that's been a real help, I think.
How do you make sure that you get to the deadline? If you hope to be writing 1,500 words a day, are you breaking that up along the week? Are you working out, right, this day I'll do this much, that means this week I'll do this much, which means this month I'll do...
Right, yeah, exactly. I tend to the first 10,000 to 20,000 words of a book I find the hardest, because that's when you're getting to know your characters and the plot is sort of working its way out, basically, and then you get more confidence as you go along. So I normally try to get 20,000 words done in a couple of months or a few months, I guess. And then what happens is at that point, I normally go away somewhere to the country to squirrel myself away. And then I will sit down and I will literally write in my Google Calendar 1,500 words by today, 1,500 words by today. And then at the end of every week, I add up and write, you know, what the total number of words should be at the end of that week in big red letters in my Google Calendar. And it doesn't always happen like that. Some days are good and some days aren't. But it's a general guide leading up to my deadlines, which have always been the very beginning of December so far, that will get me to that 100,000 word, you know, deadline.
Right at the start of the chat, you were speaking about how you do your best work in the morning. That if you were to write in the afternoon, it would take you ages and ages. How have you discovered that along the way?
I just always I've always been a morning person, so I normally sort of have no problem. You know, this morning I sort of leapt out of bed at 6:15 and went for a walk. I know that for whatever reason I operate better in the morning. And then I think it was probably when I was working in an office. Actually, I used to work at Tatler, and I just realized that if I sat back at my desk after lunch and tried to write a piece, it just was like wading through mud, really, trying to get the words out. It, for some reason, just feels a lot harder to even get a sensible sentence out in, you know, in half an hour. And it used to frustrate me because I just would think, well, this is mad, because to write this in the morning would take me 5 seconds. And as I said, I've sort of made peace with it now, and I appreciate that's how my brain works. For whatever reason, I'm a morning person. I have to therefore maximize that time and be as efficient as possible then. And then in the afternoon, I can sort of chill out a bit and give myself a break and go for a walk or read a book or sort of do whatever I want as a kind of reward, you know, in the afternoon. If I've hit my word count in the morning, then I feel like, okay, you've done that, tick, have a break, have a Kit Kat kind of thing.
I'm kind of similar to you in being much more productive in the morning, but I found that even more so recently when I have kind of figured that out, and I'm wondering whether the label might be half the problem. So deciding, it's almost like a self-fulfilling, isn't it? So if I say to myself, right, I'm a morning person, there's no way I can work in the afternoon, then perhaps when I am working in the afternoon, you've almost given up.
Yes, I do see that, and it is pigeonholing in a way. And actually the other day I had to write a short story, and I've just been up against it with various deadlines recently, and I did come back and I sort of amazed myself because I just sat back at my desk and finished and really enjoyed writing this short story for someone, and did manage to finish it by about 5 o'clock. But that is so rare. It was sort of gobsmacking to me that I managed to do it in an afternoon. So more often than not, I think it helps with planning if I just write off the afternoons and go along with the morning thing.
Just one more on being a journalist, not even being a journalist here, but
no, go for it.
You've been surrounded by words for a long, long time in your job. At what point did you realise that you have at least one book in you and actually try and do it? What was the moment there that you thought, you know, I'm going to give this a go?
I had various false starts, I think, at this, really. I joined the Evening Standard, was my first job as a journalist, and I was approached by an agent not long after that. I'd written a few things to the paper saying, did I want to write a book? I was writing a column basically for the Evening Standard when I was like 22 about being sort of a young Londoner, unable to afford rent, and love a lot about my love life back then, actually. And this agent approached me and said, did I want to write a sort of non-fiction book? And, you know, when you're 22 or 23, that's like a dream come true. So I started working on something, and actually nothing. I then moved to Dubai to work for a newspaper out there, and then started writing a book, you know, a non-fiction single girl's adventures in the desert kind of thing, which I'm thrilled, never saw the light of day, because I think it would have been like reading my teenage diary back. I think it would have been quite embarrassing. And then I sort of gave up the idea of a book and thought I couldn't do it. And it was really thanks to my very brilliant agent, Rebecca Ritchie, emailing me when I was then at Tatler a few years later, saying, hello, I really like your writing. And have you ever thought of writing a novel? Because I think you could, and et cetera, et cetera. And I think maybe like a lot of writers, the carrot and stick approach, having someone else come to me and say that was the encouragement that I needed, basically. And Becky was extremely patient. And I was very slow with writing my first book. And every now and then she'd send me an email going, just checking in. And I'd think, oh God, I've only written like 100 more words since, you know, 4 months ago when we last spoke. But eventually I got there knowing that she was sort of sitting there patiently waiting. And that was it, really. That first book deal was enough to make me think, okay, come on, this is, you know, the most exciting opportunity and the biggest opportunity I'd ever had. Let's give it a go.
Lastly, on the day, is there anything else that when you're in your day of writing, be it, you know, holed up somewhere in the country in Norfolk or wherever you are, is there something that just keeps you going and helps you out when you are facing the block, when the words aren't coming? Is there something that you can turn to, be it music, maybe a cup of coffee at a certain point, that just helps you out?
Walking, I know I've mentioned already, but that, and I know a lot of writers say this, it's almost a cliche because we bang on about it the whole time, but there is something very liberating, I think, about removing yourself from your computer, or if you're writing longhand, from your pad of paper, and just getting outside and trudging along and sort of pounding away along the footpath or a field or the beach or wherever, and things do somehow settle into place. The number of times I've been really frustrated that I can't seem to crack something, a crucial plot development, and in frustration I sort of slam my laptop shut and go for a walk, and then somehow what needs to happen becomes apparent is amazing. There's magic. That's the sort of magical bit of it, I think, really. So I would say walking, and yeah, food. I mean, a lot of toast. I eat a lot of toast when I'm away writing. It was actually embarrassing. I realized in Norfolk last year when I was away by myself, I was getting through a pack of butter a week by myself, which is quite a lot of butter, I think.
Well, you need all those carbs, all that carbs and fat just to get you walking.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, that's what I told myself. But I did. I normally do put on weight when I go away writing, even though I walk for miles, just because the sheer amount of toast that I get through is actually quite obscene.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, very quickly, before we get back to it with Sophia, just a little nudge towards our Patreon page. If you are loving the show, if you've heard any tips that has helped the way that you tell your stories, please do help us out. It means so much. You can support us over at patreon.com/writersroutine. There's a few tiers in there that you can get involved in, and you get different things from thanks to merch to actually having your book sponsor the show. which I think is pretty brilliant. If your book launch has been slightly ruined by lockdown over the last few months, well, let me push the book out there for you. Some podcasts are sponsored by razors or spreadsheet software. We're sponsored by you. It's so easy to do. It goes such a long way, I promise. Just help us out over at patreon.com/writersroutine. Right, let's get back to it then with Sophia Money Coutts talking about her brand new book, The Wishlist. In this part, we talk about the voice that Sophia told the story in and why that took her some time to find. Also, you can hear about the planning of it and when ideas pop into her head. And we pick things up with The Wishlist and where she got that very first idea at a very different party.
Well, I hope it doesn't shock anyone. I got invited to a dinner that my friend Jackie was throwing a couple of years ago. And Jackie, she used to be a journalist, actually, and she went to work for a tech company, a young tech startup. And she emailed me at one point and said, did I want to come to this tech startup dinner she was throwing to celebrate a sex tech startup? It was a new young company that started making sort of very beautiful vibrators, the sort that, you know, could sit on a mantelpiece and nobody would be any the wiser. And it was in a sort of trendy Notting Hill restaurant. And Jackie said, everyone was getting a free vibrator at their place sitting. So I was like, yeah, okay, a free dinner and a free vibrator, why not? So I went along and it was mostly women, I think all women actually, which would make sense.
And you reckon?
it was pretty much just us. And I sat next to an amazing woman who told me about, she had quite a sort of sad life story initially. She'd become pregnant with her ex-boyfriend, and I can't remember why, but they'd split up very dramatically halfway through her pregnancy, and she was devastated, alone suddenly, you know, 5 months pregnant, not sure what to do. And then to try and help herself get over this and be positive, she decided to sit down and write a list of exactly what she was looking for in a guy. And I remember it was very detailed, her list. She talked me through it. It had about 30 things on it, from sort of height and physical characteristics to his more innate character attributes. And then she said, and I met him. He came into my life. And this was, I think, a couple of years on, and she was still madly head over heels in love with this guy. He had become the de facto dad to her child. And she believed that, the power of positive thinking and putting this list out into the universe had really worked for her. And then I told my stepmom this story a few weeks later, and my stepmom went, well, yes, darling, of course, that's what I did with your father. I was like, what? And she said, yes, I did this when I wanted to meet your father, when I wanted to meet, you know, someone, and it was your father. And I was like, well, what did you write? And she said, well, I wrote tall, British, and a rower, which was quite random. My dad rowed for Oxford and then England when he was younger. And I was like, why a rower? And she said, well, darling, because they have excellent rhythm. I was like, okay, that is enough. I don't need to know anymore. Thank you very much. We talk about sex a lot in my family, which won't surprise anyone who's read my books, maybe. But that really set me off. I just thought my sort of fictional antennae waggling at this point, I loved the concept of having a heroine who wrote a list of things that she was looking for in a guy, and I just thought I could have a lot of comedy fun with it. So that was where I started, really, and then I built from there with poor old Florence.
Well, I need to just pick that apart then. You say you built from there. I know it might be quite tedious and perhaps slightly hard to do for a writer, but what does that building consist of? What happens between the moment where you've got this idea about a woman that writes a list about her perfect partner, what happens between that day and the day when you actually sit down to start writing?
It's not tedious at all, I should say. I mean, I love talking about all this. It's what happens was I started, okay, so I thought a wish list, okay, there's a woman who wants to write a wish list for what she's looking for in a guy. And then I think what I tend to do is I sit down literally with a blank Word document and I write very gobbledygooky notes to myself that only really I would understand. You know, it's like wish list, woman. And I decided she'd never had a boyfriend really in her life. And I started, but what I want to do always with my books is not just have the attention solely on the two main characters. I always want there to be a cast of sort of comedy characters around them. A bit like in a Richard Curtis film, the way that, you know, he always has this amazing cast of mad and brilliant people. I kind of always want to try and do the same. And therefore, I decided that with the wish list, Florence was going to have this very domineering and socially ambitious stepmother. And it was going to be the stepmother who forced this poor stepdaughter off to go and see a love coach. And that was how the wish list would come about, because Florence has never had a boyfriend, I decided, because I thought that was quite interesting. You know, a 30-something who's always been quite shy and feels a bit sort of left out or left behind in a way, because her love life has never amounted to much. And I really just start developing ideas almost like a spider diagram out from the central concept and just work from there, really, if that's clear enough.
How much do you need to know before you do sit down and start writing that first sentence?
I normally do know the ending. So I do normally work out quite a lot because I want to know where I'm writing to. I don't actually with my fourth book totally know the ending at the moment, but I have a very clear image of the beginning and the two characters and some of the characters around them. So yeah, I've normally mapped out, like I said, in all those very random word documents, endless chaotic word documents, I have normally fleshed out quite a lot of what I'm doing, and I will have very loose chapter outlines that sort of take me through pretty much the whole novel. I don't like sitting down and just writing blind, starting, you know, without any idea of where I'm going to with these people. I need a bit more structure than that. I did start writing in third person. I thought my first two books, having been in first person, I'd give third person a go. And I got about a third, maybe halfway through, and I was really struggling with it. And I vividly remember there was a pub. I was in this very isolated house in Norfolk, but there was luckily a pub in the village. And I walked down there. It was my Friday evening treat, was to go to the pub by myself and have, you know, chips and crab, actually, because it was by the sea. Chips, crab, and a glass of wine with my laptop. And this one Friday evening, I was really frustrated because I knew I was halfway through, but I was just struggling and it just didn't feel like I was getting anywhere with it. It didn't feel right in a way. And so I created a whole new Scrivener document, because I actually, after Word, normally I transfer everything to Scrivener, and just started very laboriously going through and changing everything from third person into first person. And as soon as I'd done that, I knew I was on the right track again, and it felt more fluid. It felt like I could write more easily again.
What was holding you back about third person, do you think?
I think the inner monologue that all my protagonists have had, I just couldn't get to grips with the emotions and the feelings and writing that convincingly when she was in third person. It just felt a lot more fluid. When I changed her into first person, I could more easily imagine her. I could more easily feel what she was feeling and therefore translate that to the page. And it just made it happen a lot more easily. So having said to my editor and my agent that I really wanted to try a book in third person, I felt a bit like I failed in a way, and that I had to go back to first person. But I do now feel much more comfortable in first person. And never say never. I would love to give third person a stab again. But I did realise then, or last year, writing the wish list, that it was much, much harder for me than first person.
When you are plotting and you know, you said that quite a lot of the time you will know the ending, you know the direction that you're heading towards. If, say, for instance, you as the writer, you are driving a car along a road that's going to take you to this, final point, the end destination. At what moment are other plot ideas coming through the windscreen so you can see them, if that makes sense?
No, it totally does. I think it happens as I go along, really. I mean, I normally have, again, to use the sort of puzzle example, it's like I've got the outline. You know when you do a puzzle, although actually I hate puzzles, you do the outline first, right, and then you fill in the details. So when it comes to my books, I tend to have an overarching sort of idea of the story, you know, from chapter one to the last chapter. And quite often, with The Plus One and What Happens Now, I actually wrote the very final scene quite early on. And then the stuff in the middle, although I will have a very loose chapter outline, the little details, you know, what happens on a day-to-day basis or week-to-week basis, that tends to come as I'm writing. It just, yeah, ideas just pop into my head as I go.
When you're writing in first person and you are heading towards this final place, how willingly does your character go where you want her to?
They're pretty biddable, my heroines, luckily. So I've never had a problem with that. I've never had to have words with them and tell them that, you know, no, this is what's going to happen. So yes, that's been all right. It's like they know what's good for them, really. And I've got their best interests at heart. I basically want my books to make people laugh and for them to be uplifting. So I'm looking out for my heroines, basically. Nothing too bad, ultimately, so far, has happened to any of them. So they listen to me.
When you're writing a story where you've got, as you've said, like there's almost the Richard Curtis cast in there. You've got an eccentric love coach. You've got the stepmom. You've got the dashing man. How are you making these characters, which some of which have been touched on before? How are you making them different and unique to you?
What I did with the wish list, actually, as an experiment, very early on, I actually cast them as a film. So when I was thinking of Florence, I literally sort of Googled young British actresses and I was looking and being like, is it her? And I did the same with, I don't want to give away any of the plotline, and talking about the men involved slightly does. But I did the same basically with all the main characters. I cast them in my head so that I had an idea of sort of who they were. And I did think, I forgot who I cast fairly quickly, but I do think it helped at the beginning to have them sort of assembled in my head as these real people.
Are you writing in, would you define it as like rom-com? Is that the genre you're in?
Yeah, I'd hope so. I think so. I love, you know, I have absolutely no problem. I love rom-com. I have absolutely no problem with chick lit either. I'm frankly delighted to be any form of lit. So yeah, I'm happy with anything really.
When you're writing in something like that, you know, if you say chick lit, when you're writing where there is a clear definition of what the story has to do and who it's going to be sold to, how much do you think about that when you are writing and kind of staying true to the form of other chick lit stories?
I suppose a bit. And I think that's developing with the more books that I write. Not to say that I'm thinking about what the readers want more, but I think I'd hope that I'm sort of improving my writing technique when it comes to, you know, making readers feel something when it comes to a book. And it's not that I'm desperately trying, you know, actually with the plus one, I know the ending of the plus one upset quite a lot of readers. And I've had emails from lots of women who, I mean, without giving anything away for people who haven't read it, they wanted Polly to end up with the other one, who she doesn't. And I did feel a bit guilty about that, but also it's my story ultimately. So I'm kind of going to write what I want to write. And of course I want people to love it and to laugh. That's always my main aim. But it is my story. So I just hope that people like it.
That is it then for this week's writer's routine. Thank you so much to Sophia for coming on. Her new book, The Wish List, is out next week now on the 6th of August. You can pre-order it if you like the sound of it. Just use the link that's in the episode notes wherever you're listening to this. Then it's win-win-win. You get the book. Sophia sells the book. We get a little kickback as well. Now, next week, we're with Christopher Fowler talking about his brand new Oranges and Lemons book. And that is a great chat. He properly explores the craft of writing. Make sure you come back next week for that, and you can subscribe to it so you never miss an episode. Just search Writer's Routine wherever you're listening to this. You can also let us know what you think online. Get in touch at writersroutine.com. You can give us a follow on Twitter as well. We are at WritersPod there. And also do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you fancy as well. That would mean the world. And we will see you next week with Christopher Fowler on Writer's Routine. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.